you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Fill her up!
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Hey guys, today's show is brought to you by Stamps.com. Are you still going to the post office? Are you still paying full price for postage? Well, thanks to Stamps.com, you don't have to do that anymore. You can mail and ship anytime, anywhere, right from your computer, send letters, ship packages, and pay less, a lot less, with discount rates from the post office and UPS and more. Stamps.com saves businesses thousands of hours and tons of money every year. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service and UPS right to your computer. It's a must-have for any business, whether you're a small office sending out invoices, a side hustle, Etsy shop, shipping out orders, or just navigating the hybrid work life. Stamps.com can handle it all with ease. No wonder over 1 million businesses use Stamps.com for their mailing and shipping. You simply use your computer to print official U.S. postage 24/7 for any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send it. Once your mail is ready, you just schedule a pickup or drop it off. It's that easy. With Stamps.com, you get discounts up to 40% off post office rates and up to 66% off UPS shipping rates. Not to mention, Stamps.com is a fraction of the cost of those expensive postage meters. Stamps.com is a no-brainer. It saves you time and money. It's no wonder nearly 1 million small businesses already use Stamps.com. Stop wasting time going to the post office. Go to Stamps.com instead. There's no risk. And with my promo code PROBLEM, you get a special offer. It includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a digital scale, all with no long-term commitments or contracts. You just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in PROBLEM. Stamps.com, promo code PROBLEM. Never go to the post office again. All right, let's start the show.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now. Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. I am the most consistent motherfucker you know, Dave Smith. He is the king of the caulks. Robbie the Fire Bernstein. What's up, my brother? How you feeling this morning, this afternoon?
I'm good, dude. We got to do some shows.
Yeah, last night was a lot of fun, dude. We were, if you missed us, we were in Brooklyn at the Brooklyn Comedy Club at Old Man Hustle. It was a great show. Myself, Robbie the Fire Bernstein, and our boy Chris Vega. Great show. Sold out the room. I guess it was they're a new club, but it was their first sellout, which I thought was pretty. That was cool.
Oh, that's good stat.
Made me feel good. Yeah, that was nice. And if you missed it, we're coming back this Sunday. So come out and see us if you're in the Brooklyn area. It was very cool for me on a lot of different levels. A really, really fun night. Number one, I'm from Brooklyn, and so it's, you know, going home and doing a show in Brooklyn is fun, and it's really cool to go do a show in Brooklyn and to be able to sell it out. And I know, like, really, you know, from the bottom of my heart, and I know you feel this way too, Rob, that it's just so cool that we can just go do shows and fill up rooms with our people. It's really just, it's great. And it, so it, it means a lot to us that, that you guys come out to the shows, and we love doing stand-up comedy. Like, it's just, you know, it's the best. And that's really what we, me and Rob started as, you know, and then the podcasting thing was kind of like secondary to that. And then of course, you know, with the podcast revolution kind of happened and this became kind of the main thing. But stand-up is our first love. And it's a lot of fun to be able to do that and to draw your own crowd. And so that was really fucking cool. Now, maybe, you know, we could talk about this for a minute, but me and Rob were talking about this last night a little bit. And I don't know if we have slightly different perspectives on it, but you're just saying, like, so I used to, for years, I just grinded stand-up comedy like every night. Like, the reason I'm good at comedy is because I spent, you know, like well over a decade doing, just obsessively doing stand-up, like every single night, being at comedy clubs, being around comedy, doing comedy, all of that. And I don't really do that anymore. And I mean, not part of it's just the last crazy year. But part of it's also just, you know, I have a family now and stuff, and I've got the podcasting stuff, and there's just a lot going on, and I don't feel like being away from my family every day. Like, I just don't, I'm not particularly motivated to do that. And I'm good enough at stand-up because I have my chops from all those years that I don't really need that anymore. But the other part of it is that it's like, you know, the purest attitude in stand-up comedy, which is what I always had traditionally, was that, you know, you don't want to just get up in front of your crowd. You want to get up in front of random crowds too, you know? And the theory being that, like, well, okay, my crowd already likes me, so it's going to be a little bit easier to kill with that room than it will be to kill with some room of people who have no idea who I am. So if you work your jokes there, then you can really make sure they're that, you know, that on point. And then ultimately, when you bring them to your crowd, they're just that much better. But obviously the end goal is to be in front of your crowd, right? Like the ultimate A plan for a stand-up comedian is to be, you know, Dave Chappelle or something like that, where you're always in front of your crowd. That's who the crowd just always is at your shows. And that really, for me, kind of changed over the last few years when on top of having a family and being more successful and not needing to go grind it out in all those shows, just the whole rise of wokeism, the culture changed so much to the point that you almost always have to be on guard of saying a no-no word or saying a dangerous thought, where people will just, you know, like, it's not even like the room won't love it, but there'll be three people in the room who feel completely entitled to be like, that was offensive and blah, blah, blah. And it almost put me in a position where I'm like, I don't even give a shit to do comedy for you fucking people. There's a funny, Chappelle had a bit about this, like a couple specials ago, where he was like, he did the impression and he's like, that's my impression of you. You guys suck. And like, he's just shitting on his audience. He goes, you are the worst people anyone ever tried to entertain, you know? And so I kind of have that feeling. And like, our crowd is just so cool and they're just so down to laugh that I'm kind of like, yeah, you know what? I'll just do stand up for my crowd. I don't care. Yeah. Anyway, so I was thinking about that.
No, I mean, listen, when I leave my house, the only thing I'm leaving behind is no furniture and a domino set. So, you know, it's a little bit easier for me to make the decision that I'm going to venture out. But no, I got to say, more and more, I guess there's something really nice when you show up in front of your crowd and you've crafted the stuff so you know it's done. And like, you know that they're about to hear some really polished shit, and that's relaxing. I am finding that some of the material that our crowd likes, I cannot work on in a club. And like, it's the stuff that they most enjoy, you know what I mean? And it's like, when I'm in front of the people that listen to us here, that's kind of, it's almost like family. I want to impress them the most. Like, that's the right people I care about. Those are the people that actually like what we do. And so I agree with you that it's taken this weird turn where there's certain topics that even if like you just tip your toe into them, some of the room is so upset at you. And it's like, you can get by, like you can still do it. You can upset some people and half the room will laugh and then you can rebuild from it. But it doesn't motivate you creatively when you know you're showing up to New York City clubs where you might potentially have an argument with someone. You might even end up in a fight. You might walk people and be in trouble with the booker. I get it. Like when you get to Patrice's level or whatever, and I like, not that I'm as funny as Patrice ever was, But like, he's at a level where he's allowed to walk people. I am not. Like, I will not work that club anymore if I decide to delve into a topic enough where I'm walking people.
Yeah, and you're like, fuck you guys, you want to leave, leave. Like, that's
yeah,
not,
I'm,
that's,
I'm not allowed
that's
to
tough
do that.
And like, well, by the way, just to be clear, because I was around for those days, Patrice, but this is what happens, right? We, like, our group of comics, like Legion of Skanks, those guys, we loved Patrice. We like worshiped him. Like, he was our guy. Like, he was just like, he's the best. We were all like, Attell and Patrice are the best comics in New York City. And like Greg Giraldo and a few others that were like in that ballpark, and then Bill Burr and stuff like that. But those were like our guys, really were like Patrice and Attell. Everyone worships Patrice now after he's dead. But it was, that's not what it was like when he was alive. It was just like us. And like, you know, there, he had his whole, you know, like people, but Patrice got banned from a lot of those clubs. It's not like as if he was just allowed to do it. Patrice was banned from like the, I don't know exactly banned, you know, a lot of times they'd say he was banned and then they would, you know, like he could really kind of come back if he wanted to. And then sometimes it was like, they'd be like he'd ban them. Like, they'd be like, okay, Patrice is suspended for a month. And he'd be like, fuck you, I'll never work the club again. Like, you know, because that was Patrice's attitude. But Patrice was one of those, not the Comedy Cellar, the comic strip, like all these clubs that were the big clubs at the time. Patrice just straight up wasn't working anymore. That's part of the reason why Elephant in the Room, he was running that at like Eastville and CB's Comedy Club. That's like where he was running that shit, because he was like, fuck all those other clubs, because he would do that. And then they'd be like, well, you know, you walked a lot of people tonight. And he'd be like, fuck it, those people stunk, you know? And like, so it's not, just to be clear, even no matter what level you're at, short of like Chappelle, Seinfeld level, it's a tough thing. Yeah, I remember when I was working our special Libertas, which that came out in 2007.
You crafted so much of that at LOL, which is the harshest environment.
And oh yeah.
Like, I mean, I was shocked every night that the things you were able to win people over for, which.
Well, you know what? There I would be able to win people over, but that was like
5 years ago.
Yeah. So this was like the LOL stuff was almost, it was before the Trump years, you know? So
yeah, it really has changed.
Yeah, it changed a lot after that. So my special Libertas, like a lot of the first half of it was, it was out in 2017, and the first half of it was all about kind of like the rise of Trump and like all shit related to that. That stuff I didn't really craft at LOL. The second half of it, a lot of that stuff I crafted at LOL and Eastville and some of the other clubs in the city and stuff. But one of the things I noticed when I was working out, you know, a lot of the Trump stuff, which is, you know, which a lot of those jokes I was really proud of. Like, there was some good shit in there that was very different than any of the other Trump material that comics were doing, which a lot of it was pretty fucking hacky. But so I noticed this thing, and I actually talk about it on the special. It's one of the first bits I do, where I'm talking about what it's like to talk about Trump to regular crowds. And so I kind of, part of the reason why I had that take is I had to almost work that in, like this disclaimer, to get the crowd to loosen up. So like, I would mention Trump and then I'd be like, oh, look how weird it already is in the room. You guys are all worried. Are you on my side? Like, do you hate Trump? Are you? And then you almost like, you almost bully them into giving you permission to do this. And I would almost kind of disclaim it by being like, yeah, motherfucker, I'm not like a Trump supporter here. I don't support your side or his side. I don't give a fuck about any of that. You know what I mean? And then just relentlessly, you know, like bash them and then bash Trump and all of them. And so I would find this way to do it. Cause if you just started talking about Donald Trump and then you were just making fun of Hillary Clinton, there'd be these fucking like house moms, like fucking walking, standing up, and this is racist and Trump's a racist and you should condemn him. And you're like, lady, you're at a fucking comedy club. Like, what are you doing right now? You know? And it would never be the whole room. It'd always just be, you know, the three woke assholes, like always, you know? But so then I'd find this way to kind of disclaim it, put those people in their place, and then I'm allowed to do my comedy. But I always felt, even then, almost like I felt a little fucked up about it. Cause I was like, as a comic, like, okay, look, I'm not a Trump supporter. So I'm not lying to you by letting you know I'm not a Trump supporter before I go and make fun of Hillary Clinton. But then I'm like, I shouldn't have to. I shouldn't have to sit here and worry about your feelings or disclaim something before I can tell my brilliantly crafted, hilarious joke. Like, let me, it's like, just shut up and like laugh or don't laugh, you know, like it's, and the idea that you have to stand up comics, if you're not just, you know, it's fine if you completely buy into all of the approved opinions, then you can still be free. But if you don't, then you have to find a way to guard against this and deliver this material. And I just thought that was like, I was like, that's bullshit. And it was something that really turned me off to just doing like the club circuit. It's been, in my experience, it's been better since the reopening, kind of. I think people are really hungry. They don't give a fuck and they just want to have fun and go out and laugh and stuff. But, you know, I really haven't been doing all the shows I'm at now. It's like pretty much, even when it's at like a club spot, it's like, I'm tweeting that I'm going to be there and the room's at least like half my fans. So it's, you know, it's interesting. But anyway, it's great that they come out for us.
You're inspiringly good at going from, I'm assuming you sit down pen and paper, but maybe you don't even do that, but you're pretty good at just crafting it and having it work. So you seem to be bypassing part of the process, and I'm finding, and I'm behind you in terms of my comedy years, but I'm finding with some of my material that is doing the best and I find to be the most interesting, which is the stuff that's a little bit political, more and more, I don't need that. I don't need to hone it in the club, which I think, if anything, that's like, that's a kudos if you can figure out how to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I like that a lot about your comedy style. And the reason I do that is because that's what I like, you know what I mean? So I feel like, you know, there's a weird thing. And, so one time I was with Tom Woods and Bob Murphy. It was when we were on the Contra Cruise and we were sitting around like having some drinks and chatting, you know, like late into the night. I mean, I think probably like Tom and Bob would probably retire at some point. Like the Contra Cruise was so much fun, man. I don't know if they'll ever do that again, but we'd just drink and talk all night long. And they'd go to like probably 1 a.m. or something like that. And then, you know,
and
like
Scott Bob and
Tom. And then me and Scott would just go till like 4 a.m. You know what I mean? Like, this is before I had kids, before I was married and stuff. There, you know, it was like that. I was in those days where I was used to, you know, being up all into the night. And we would just drink, just with a crowd, you know, a group of great people just hanging out, just talking all types of shit. But I remember this one conversation with like Michael Bolton, who he would hang with us too. Michael Bolton would be going hard. That guy is, I love that guy, by the way, such a great dude. But so we'd be hanging, we'd be talking about whatever. But this one particular time we were all hanging out and they were like asking me a lot about like comedy, like the craft of comedy. And it was funny because like at first I'm kind of like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't even have that much to say about it. I don't know. I just kind of go do it, you know, whatever. And then they'd ask like one question and then I'd have like a 15-minute answer for it and another one. And then you're like, oh, okay, you know, I guess I do have a lot to say about this. I just don't really think about it. But I loved when Dave Chappelle said once, I think it was on his Inside the Actor's Studio, where he said, comedy is a language that I speak fluently, you know? And I think like, you know, I don't speak it as fluently as Dave Chappelle does, but it's a language that I speak. Like, I, you know, like in the same sense that if you just went to like, you know, Italy with someone who spoke Italian, you're like reading out of a book and you're like, grande, but, and they're just like they speak Italian, you know? Now there might be someone else who's like, speaks it a little bit more perfectly. Like Dave Chappelle was like born in Italy. He was born in comedy. He speaks it completely fluently. The rest of us aren't quite at that level, but we can still speak it. So I'm kind of able to, like, if I have ideas about things or things that are funny, the things that I think are going on are funny, I can get up on stage and just speak it in the language of comedy. So I will talk this in a way that gets the crowd to laugh at what I'm talking. You just kind of learn how to do that. But one of the things that I think is really interesting, so it reminds me, I was on with Zuby on his show. He agreed, at least I have a verbal contract with him. He did agree to come on Part of the Problem. So I'm going to try to set that up in the next few weeks if possible, but he's great. Really enjoyed doing his show. And I've been a fan of his for a while, but he was talking about at one point was really interesting is that, so he's a rapper, very talented rapper, but he's clean. Like he doesn't curse. He doesn't talk about drug use or gangbang or anything. He's like a good dude.
Yo, I'm reading this textbook.
Yeah, exactly. But he's very talented. But the funny thing, right? But he is really critical of like left wing culture and left wing politics and stuff like that. And so he'll have these people who are like, he was saying, you know, who'll be like, hey, dude, I'm a big fan of your music. I love all your stuff. I don't follow you online because I don't want like people to see that I'm following you because it might be like a weird thing, you know, like that type thing. Which me and you get some of that too. Like I get a bunch of other people in the comedy scene shooting me text messages and stuff who are like, dude, I love what you're fucking saying on Twitter. I love that you're saying this. Like, I'm not going to say this stuff, but I love that you're saying this. And that, you know, but it's just funny that, you know, like in his perspective, right, you could be a fan of like gangster rap, just talking about like pimping bitches and like all this shit and not worry at all. Like have no fear about the social pressure of that. But if you like this guy who's like a good dude, who's not promoting any of that shit, then that's like the dangerous guy to like. It's so weird how upside down the world is. But in the same sense, there was something you said to me last night, which was, you know, made me think of it. Like it reminded me of that same pattern where you were like, the funny thing is you go like, you can go into any random club and do your like jokes about like titties or something like that. Like no one cares about that. But yeah. Then if you start doing your more like thought out intelligent shit, that's when they'll kind of be like, whoa, you know, it's so backward in a sense of
my
like,
other stuff is very
offended by.
Yeah, that's so true. Cause everything is so X rated and I can do that all day.
You're never worried about that.
Right.
You're never worried that like, oh, someone's going to get offended because I'm talking about just like this degenerate like shit. Like that's not the issue at all. And it's really funny. Like it's just interesting. It says something really interesting about our society. Like you could go up there and do like a joke criticizing religion or, you know, like traditional morality or anything like that. You're never worried that that's going to be what offends people. It says something about who the dominant culture and who the counterculture is at this point. But that's the funny thing is that it's like the shit that is offensive is like, wouldn't you like, that's what's offensive to you? Like, you don't mind that Rob just did a whole joke about like weed and titties, but like you're pissed off because he reads about economics. Like,
right.
You think that's the fucked up thing about Rob? Like not the other part.
It's so fucked up because you're so right. If you even just do an anti-Biden joke, there'll be a percentage of the room that's just upset that you're even going to like take. Like for me, even we like Ron Paul. If someone got up and started doing a Ron Paul joke, I'd be interested. I'd be like, holy shit, this guy's got a take on Ron Paul. It doesn't matter what I'm into. You and I have said this. One of the best pieces of like comedy satire I've ever seen was Jim Jeffries' bit about guns. I don't agree with one word of that bit, but that is the highest
excellent
level of the kind of comedy I like, where he's taking a social issue, he has an opinion, and he makes it really funny. And I don't agree with one word of it. There's this new thing that if you're approaching it from our perspective, you can win a lot of people over and a lot of people laugh, but there's some percentage of the room that just because you're approaching it from the other angle,
they shut down.
Yeah, it's like a censorship thing where it's like, I can't support this.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny because we don't really talk about just comedy that much on the show, but I'm interested to have this this conversation. But like, so I used to put it this way, right? Where I'd say, this is how I would say it, right? I go, if you could pick whatever your favorite comedy is, like whether it's a movie or a television show or a stand-up special or anything like that, like your favorite thing, the thing that makes you laugh the hardest, right? And I was going to say, okay, I'll give you $10 million if you sit through it and don't laugh once. You absolutely could do that. There's no question. It wouldn't even be challenging. You'd just be like, yeah, okay, I won't laugh. Like I will make myself not laugh, even though this is your favorite thing. So the point that I'm just getting at when I make that, the point I'm making is that like, it does kind of take two. Like even if something is really funny, even if it's your type of thing, if you decide to shut down, you can shut down and not enjoy some type of comedy. Now, you know what I mean? And it's not as if like, look, if something doesn't make you laugh, it doesn't fucking make you laugh. That's fine. You know, like that's part of the game is we're trying, but it's a different thing when people like intentionally shut down if you're coming at it from the other side. And I agree with you that we don't do that. I mean, like I love that Jim Jeffries bit. I've loved all types of bits that are coming from completely different, you know, completely different perspectives. I remember one time, like it wasn't great. It wasn't that funny, but it did make me laugh when they did Saturday Night Live did a thing on Ron Paul. And it was completely not coming from our perspective, you know, but they were doing the debates at one of the debates that he was in. And they had some guy like playing Ron Paul. And I think the question was, they go, so Dr. Paul, do you believe government should be involved in healthcare at all? And he was like, no, absolutely not. And then they go, all right, but let's say that there's a child who's in desperate need, and they paint like some crazy situation. And then they're like, then can the government help out that person just a little bit? And Ron Paul goes, no, I'm a purist. And like, it was just kind of funny. Like the way they did it, it wasn't like that, but it made me chuckle. And I was like, I don't care. Like, I don't care whether you're like, you're trying to be funny here. Funny is a different force. It's not propaganda. It's going after humor. It doesn't, you know, anyway, I wish as a comedian and just a free person, I wish we had more of that, that culture that we had just really definitely 5 years ago, but really 10 years ago, where it was just like when people came into a comedy club, you expected people to say fucked up shit that was hilarious, and that no one was like, there just wasn't the same culture of like the race to be offended. All right, guys, let's take a moment and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Quip. I love this company. I've been talking about them for quite a while. They've been a longtime sponsor. This is the company that's going to take care of all of your oral health needs. Okay. I love their toothbrush. Me and my wife both use it. Separate ones. We have our own, but we love the toothbrush. I love their floss, love their dispensers. And now they just launched their mouthwash. It's excellent. It also comes with a refillable dispenser that's just delightful to use. It's sleek to fit any bathroom counter. It also looks really cool, which I you know, enjoy. I love their gum. They have like every product that you need to be on top of your oral hygiene, which is very important. I don't know about you guys, but just brushing and flossing, you know, it's great, but you love to have that mouthwash too. You feel good when you go out into the world. Quip is great because they take care of all of this stuff. It's a one-stop shop. You get everything you need. All of their products have no bad ingredients in it. It's all just good stuff. I really love them. I recommend people check it out. They have affordable refills plus free shipping. It's so easy to keep your whole mouth healthy. That's why over 5 million people are already using Quip. It's really just an excellent company that takes care of all of this stuff. I love all of it. The sensitive sonic vibration toothbrush with the built-in 2-minute timer that I've told you guys about. Make sure you get a complete brush. The mouthwash I just started using is really, really great. I also love the gum. They have a kid's toothbrush as well. If you got little ones, go to getquip.com right now and you can get $5 off a mouthwash starter kit. That's $5 off the mouthwash starter kit, which includes the refillable dispenser and a 90-day dose supply of Quip's 4x concentrated formula. Go to getquip.com/problem5. That'll get you that discount. It's getquip, getquip.com/problem5, Quip, the good habits company. All right, let's get back into the show.
So one more thought on stand-up, and I think you would probably agree with me on this. One of the things to me that makes stand-up so fun and always fresh is that it never stops being a challenge. There's a lot of games in life that you play, mm-hmm. and once you figure out the game, you kind of get bored of it. Stand-up's not that way. There's always like some new thing that you can improve. You can always like strive for perfection. So I will say, in terms of like city spots and doing like the more controversial material, sometimes it's fun for me battling a crowd, and some like I still have this feeling like I can win, and like there's a way to figure it out, and yeah. there's a thrill to that. I think more of the hindrance is like, for example, if the stand would book me every single night and let me eat shit trying to do this material, like I would do that every night because it's a thrill. It's more you get to a point where you're like, I don't really want to try and deal with this booker to be on this stage. Like I can just, I figure this out. I know how to write it, do it to my crowd. I'll put it up online, try and get more people, book more of my own shows. If anything, it's like the actual process is becoming more efficient. than, and it's more, you know what I mean? It's more of like an industry thing than necessarily like a dealing with people thing.
No, I agree with that too. I think there's that whole side of it as well. I just think that the thing where I'd maybe disagree with you a little bit, or it's not even disagree, just like the way I feel about it is like, I love the challenge of like a tough crowd. You know, I've dealt with a ton of them over the years. There's nothing more satisfying than like winning over a crowd that's on the fence. The reason I used that analogy about sitting through your favorite movie when you paid $10 million, it's a slightly different thing when it's a crowd who's deciding not to give you a chance because you offended their thing. That I just kind of, I'm like, you know what? Like, fuck you then.
Also,
just leave.
Exactly to my example, that's part of the game also where you get bored of it, where you're like, I've done crowd work. I've had this conversation before in one back room. I don't care. I want to do this material. Like, I literally don't care. So that actually is a part that in terms of interest level can change.
And I also just like, again, it speaks to, in a way, it's like the same, again, it's a minority. It's not like the majority of crowds. And that's what's annoying about it too. It's always like this one, you know, dummy who's like, let the rest of us all enjoy this, you know? But it's in the same sense that like our group gets kicked off of Facebook, but the Legion of Skanks group is still up there. So it's like, yeah, you can do filth, just unmitigated filth. No one cares about that. But you have the wrong political view, and all of a sudden this is, you know, the thing that'll fuck everyone up. Anyway, the point of all of this was that it's just so goddamn cool that we can now sell out with our own crowd. And, you know, anyway, we're coming up again. We're going to do Brooklyn again on Sunday. Then we got the show in Norwalk, Connecticut. Norwalk? Am I saying that right? Norwalk, Connecticut. That's coming up on, what is it, the 19th? Yes, on the 19th, two shows up there. Come check us out there. Then, of course, Porkfest. And we got a whole bunch of stuff. Me and Rob, we're going back on the road. There'll be a lot more stuff coming up in the near future. So, look for all of that. The other thing I will say, aside from the comedy aspect, which was really nice to see, is that it did, like, being back in Brooklyn, it was the first time I've been to Brooklyn in quite a while. It was the first time, I mean, I've been I've been in Manhattan a lot since the whole COVID thing. But this is the first time I've gone to Brooklyn since COVID. And it was, like, really nice to see that there were a lot more people not wearing masks. I mean, New York City has been pretty insane. New York City, up until the last week, 2 weeks, everyone was still masked up outside, like almost everyone. It was still a thing where, like, if you didn't have a mask walking around outside, you were getting looks from people. And in Brooklyn the other day, I'd say outside 50%.
Yeah, well, those people are young and attractive and they don't get sick.
Yeah, well, but even some of them still have the masks on, but it was at least like, okay, at least some of you guys are, yes, you are. It really, you know, and then inside was really nice to see, as the staff didn't have masks on. It wasn't just that you didn't have to have a mask. It was like that the staff there could actually, you know, you kind of feel bad. It makes me feel so uncomfortable when the whole staff is masked up. And you just know they got to work like that and it fucking sucks. And then you kind of feel like a dick when you take your mask off. It feels like this weird thing, like, oh, I get to enjoy myself, but you don't. I hate that, you know? So it's really nice to see, you know, it's like it's being a server is not an easy gig. I mean, they, you know, if you hustle, you can make good tips. And when it's a sold out room like that, you know, I'm sure that girl made like some decent money last night, but it's tough. You're like, you're moving like the whole time, you know, and to do that with a mask on just sucks. And so that was cool to see, like, that just made me feel more comfortable. Everyone in there was not wearing masks, security, bartender, waitress, no one's wearing masks. I really liked that. There's something really nice about that in Brooklyn, just seeing, like, you know, the place I'm from being like, it reminded me almost of like this, you know, some movie where you're like hiding, taking shelter in a bunker, and as they're like slowly coming out of the bunker, like, oh, can I take my mask off now? Oh, okay. Oh, look, we're not dead. You know, anyway.
I hope he doesn't get upset at me for this, but I'm going to pay him a compliment. From what I've heard, some of the other clubs have been a little bit less cool, and some might even be tapping into the Exler pass or whatever the New York City COVID passport is. Ed's been super cool. He's the owner of the Brooklyn Comedy Club. I think he would have similar views to us on a lot of these issues. He's definitely like a pro freedom guy, and he's been trying to operate as open as he can be. He's a responsible business owner, and he's been in compliance, but he's definitely the kind of guy who's like, I don't care about vaccine passports. You know what I mean? He's not taking that angle in any way. And even that from a business in our business, right? The show business stuff. It's nice to have someone who has at least a respect for our political views, or even maybe similar sensibilities.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it almost like it really does to me in a way kind of transcend political views, even what I'm talking about. Cause what I'm talking about is just like what makes me happy about it is just someone who loves Brooklyn, who's from Brooklyn, who just likes to go back there and see like, oh, okay, there's some vibrance to this city again, you know? Like there's people showing their face in front of other human beings. Like, forget your politics or your feelings on the virus or any of that shit. Just like, it's just nice to see, oh my God, like a little bit of hope that there might be some sense of normalcy, you know? Like, again, I get your point about the politics, but I'm like, you know, it's a very recent phenomenon that showing your face in public became a political issue. You know what I mean? Like this was,
no, I like the business owners that fought, that were like, I'm going to try and stay as open as allow me to open, versus some of the other people who just said, well, we got to be responsible. Government said I can't operate. Let me get a PPE loan. No one can come in here without a mask. No one can come in here unless you've been vaccinated. Like,
yeah. So I 100% agree with you on that. In fact, the compliance arm of the state. Yeah. In fact, I thought some of the greatest heroes of the whole pandemic were business owners who actually fought the laws and stayed open in defiance of government, you know, mandates and restrictions. And, you know, to me, that's like, you know, civil disobedience, like at the highest level, like just being like, listen, I don't care what you say, I'm doing like that. The highest level to me of civil disobedience, the most noble level, is when the government makes some peaceful, you know, nonviolent activity illegal, and you just say, I am going to continue doing this and do whatever you want to me, but I'm going to keep doing this, right? Like that's the essence of the best version of civil disobedience. And I think about, so there were a couple gyms in New Jersey. There are a couple like speakeasy type places in New York. That was pretty cool. There was that woman in Texas, I believe, who had the hair salon, who was just straight up like, we're staying Nancy open. Pelosi?
Nancy Pelosi?
Yeah. Yeah. Nancy Pelosi. No, some woman, this is before the Nancy Pelosi thing. Some woman, she actually went to jail. The judge threw her in jail for a night. He said basically, like at one point, and this is what I thought was really heroic. He basically had her there in court, started berating her, demanded that she apologize, and said if she didn't, he was going to hold her in contempt and throw her in jail for the night. And she refused. And he had been saying she was selfish and demand she apologize. And she'd say, and she goes, Your Honor, there's nothing selfish about me wanting to feed my kids. And I won't apologize. And he threw her in jail
for
the night.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Because, you know, he felt it was, he felt it was unsafe to open a salon due to COVID. So he threw her in a prison where it's nice and safe for, you know, no one gets COVID in a prison. Anyway. Those were really some of the heroes of over the last year. All right. Well, we've talked a lot about that. That was a great show last night. Come out and see us in Brooklyn next week, or out in Connecticut, or Porkfest. I'll be at Freedom Fest hosting the whole event. I guess we'll talk about a couple things. We don't have that much time left, but so let's here. I got a video that was going around. Brian Stelter, our favorite little piggy, is trending because he interviewed on his show the White House press secretary. This was really, I got to say, it's glorious watching the mask slip off the corporate press over the last over the last month. I mean, this is something obviously that's been building for years and certainly was building during the Trump years, but really with the collapse of the COVID narrative and so much of this other stuff, it's a glorious time for the mask slipping. What we're in the middle of right now with this whole COVID narrative And I know we've been talking about this a lot on the show lately, separate from this clip that I'm going to play in a second, but maybe we'll talk a little bit about that Wall Street Journal piece as well. This is, I got to say, like, I feel like a really big one. You know, I think that in my life, if I'd say the three biggest, and there's a lot, but the three biggest, most prominent media scams, you know, narratives that were built off lies that completely fall apart in front of the American people's eyes. The three biggest, I would say, were the WMD Saddam Hussein. You know, Saddam has weapons of mass destruction and he's colluding with Al-Qaeda to hand these mass weapons of mass destruction off to, you know, whatever. Like, I think that the whole, all of the lies leading up to the war in Iraq just falling apart to the point where, like, no one could really argue that that was true. They all had to kind of admit it, you know? That's one. Trump-Russia collusion, I think, is two. The sitting president is a puppet of Vladimir Putin. Meanwhile, nothing. It's complete bullshit. And I think three now is becoming this whole COVID, just the whole COVID, all the lies, the origin story, the cover up, the claims that it was a conspiracy theories, the all of the you know, policies being based on complete pseudoscience while they demand we follow the science, all of this shit. And it's real interesting to see this one get exposed. And I think in a lot of ways, this one might be bigger than the other two. Not necessarily that it was a bigger lie, or even if comparing it to the war in Iraq, that it was a bigger disaster.
It's more intrusive.
Huh?
It's more intrusive. The Iraq war, we didn't, yes. I mean, we probably paid for it through inflation or some other economic
sure.
means,
but it didn't. But not like this.
Yeah.
This didn't, none of these things, you know, you saying the sitting president is in, you know, beholden to a hostile foreign power is a crazy lie for the media to tell, but it did not upend every single American's lives. It did not, you know, like,
it was annoying and kept us from getting a wall.
Yes, right, exactly. But I'm saying, like, more importantly, kept us from working out a deal with Russia and getting some peace in the Middle East, possibly. Not that that would have happened. Who the hell knows?
I like walls.
Yeah, I know. You're a big wall guy. He knocks him down just so he can build him up again. No, but this, you know, destroyed every cultural, societal norm, locked people in their homes, destroyed tens of millions of people's lives. I mean, right, like, this is the biggest one. So for this to collapse is a real thing. And maybe before we play the Brian Stelter piece, I'll even, maybe we'll just mention because it's more on topic this way. Like I was saying to you before, I mean, it's just really interesting that, you know, like, all of the sudden, this is just out there all over the place. But the Wall Street Journal just ran this piece. I'm not going to read it, but if you guys are interested, it's called, it's an opinion piece called "The Science Suggests a Wuhan Lab Leak. The COVID-19 pathogen has a genetic footprint that has never been observed in natural coronaviruses." And it's a whole piece arguing that it's not just the circumstantial evidence, you know, like the people getting sick at the Wuhan lab or any of that, but that at this point, the overwhelming scientific evidence is that it came from the Wuhan lab because of the way the virus evolves or the way it mutates. You know, I guess that's six, half dozen. But more than that, the piece is specifically arguing that it's because of gain of function that COVID was created. So this is now just one more element that, you know, is like a major, like, oh shit, has Rand Paul lost one round to Fauci? It's always Rand Paul versus Fauci. And then the entire corporate press is dunking on Rand Paul. And then 2 weeks later, Rand Paul was 100% right. Every single round goes to Rand Paul. And there was an article, like, I think Fee put out that had a title similar to that. But yeah, so anyway, it's just interesting to watch this one that might be the biggest one in terms of how much it affected Americans collapsing right in front of us.
Yeah, it's a good article. Good read.
Yeah. No, I recommend people read it. All right, guys, let's take a moment and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Bambi. When you're running a business, HR issues can kill you. wrongful termination suits, minimum wage requirements, labor regulations, and HR manager salaries aren't cheap, an average of $70,000 a year. Bambee, spelled B-A-M-B-E-E, was created specifically for small businesses. You can get a dedicated HR manager, craft HR policy, and maintain your compliance, all for just $99 a month. With Bambee, you can change HR from your biggest liability to your biggest strength. Your dedicated HR manager is available by phone, email, or real-time chat. From onboarding to terminations, they customize your policies to fit your business and help you manage your employees day-to-day, all for just $99 a month. It's month-to-month. There's no hidden fees. You can cancel anytime. You didn't start your business because you wanted to spend your time on HR compliance. Let Bambee help you. Get your free HR audit today. Go to Bambee.com/POTP. That's Bambee.com/POTP. All right, let's get back into the show. Okay, so while this is all collapsing, here's how, and by the way, CNN's ratings are also collapsing. This is what people are seeing, the few who are still turning on CNN.
Jen, thanks for coming on Reliable Sources.
My pleasure.
Busy summer ahead, infrastructure, election reform. What does the press get wrong when covering Biden's agenda? When you watch the news, when you read the news, what do you think we get wrong?
Well, look, I think some of our muscles have atrophied a little bit over the last few years, and there isn't a lot of memory, or recent memory, or longer memory on how long it takes to get legislation forward, or how messy the process of negotiating and the process of getting legislation across the finish line can be. So we know, we understand everybody's always looking for a deadline, a timeline, things like that. But at the end of the day, our focus is on getting these bills across the finish line, doing it in a bipartisan way if we can. And we certainly recognize that that can be messy along the process. So I don't know if that's the press getting it wrong. I'll leave you to the critique of that, Brian. But I think sometimes we forget how strange the last 4 years were. And when we return to a place where democracy is working, where we're talking with Democrats and Republicans, where we're trying to get bills and legislation passed, it feels foreign. But this is actually how it's supposed to work.
There are times in your briefings where you seem so positive. Then there's times where
I don't remember. So her claim is, listen, Donald Trump was so effective and was able to get things done so quickly that that was an oddity. And so the reason why we can't give you strict timelines on when we're going to get things done is because we're actually going with the usual process, which is a messy negotiating and takes time. And we can't actually commit to anything because we're not into accountability. So forget Trump, who was so good at getting things done. Is that what she was trying to say?
You know, I don't think that's what she would say. But it does seem like, look, first of all, like the funniest thing about this to me, right, is that Brian Stelter does this show where he's like supposedly critiquing the media. But of course, every single week he comes up and he has the same assessment, which is that everyone's doing a really great job except Fox News and all these lies on the internet. But everyone else is just, man, they're on top of it. They are just nailing it, you know? And like, that's his show. It's just, and so he's sitting there and the topic is always, how is the media doing? And meanwhile, he is giving the perfect example of what terrible journalism is. Like, he has the press secretary, the representative of the president of the United States of America, the mouthpiece for the president on. And his first question is, what do we get wrong? Like, please scold me. Tell me why we're bad. And then just lets her spout off nonsense while nodding his head and not pushing back on anything. Literally, just like, it'd be so easy if you were to be a journalist here. I'm not even saying like you have to be a perfect journalist or someone great, you know, okay, really great would be to ask about corruption or some this or that, or, you know, why did we push back the deadline to get out of Afghanistan, or what was, you know, why are we, so, you know, moving troops around in the Middle East, or, you know, where's the money going with Big Pharma, or, you know, like, I'm not even saying you have to be like some great reporter, but even if you were just pretending, you know, when they say something like, well, you know, you have to understand the legislative process takes time, you'd be like, okay, but is it reasonable for the American people to have some understanding of when things are going to get done? You know, like, just something. But he literally just gets her in there and goes, so what are we doing wrong? Go. I'm going to smoke a cigarette. You go. Just ramble your stuff. I'll just nod along while you do it. Yeah, so great. So great that you would say that. Man, you're smart. Anyone ever tell you how smart you are? Like, it's just, like, what is this? just self-flagellating for, you know, like for the administration. It's just, I don't know. Well,
Brian's basically checking with his boss to make sure that they're getting the propaganda correct.
Yep. That's pretty much what you're watching. So let's play the next clip. It's just kind of more of the same.
For other PR professionals who watch what you do, for journalists who watch what you do, what's your advice for them about trying to stay in close to the truth in this world of lies?
Well, I think what I try to do is stay grounded to the facts, and what I mean by that, the details, and what we can help provide publicly to clarify context, to make it more understandable to the press, to the public. Sometimes it's not more complicated than that. Really talking to policy experts and gaining an understanding myself so that I can communicate in a way that my mother, my mother-in-law, other people who are not involved in politics like you and I are every day would understand what we're trying to do. I keep grounded in that, but try to go deep in the details so I can kind of pull out and make it accessible.
Well, that's the common thread. I know this is all...
I mean, how incredible. She goes, listen, I just want to explain that the process is confusing. So just remember the process is confusing too. I'm just trying to share the details. Those are opposite statements.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just utter nonsense. That doesn't even make any sense. And he just sits there the whole time. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's exactly right. Yeah. You just got to explain it, you know? All right, here you go. Here's my one-on-one with the White House press secretary. Here we go. So what do you try to do that just makes things so great? He goes, well, you know, the process can be confusing. And so I just try to explain it in a way where people who aren't like me and you are really into it. And I stay grounded and rooted in the facts and the details. And then I try to explain the facts and the details. He goes, yeah.
So if you got all these details,
can you imagine conducting an interview this way? This is all they've got. Like to even pretend that you are in any way a journalist. It's so, and what's beautiful about this is how transparent it is, because I'll tell you, this is what we need in this country more than anything else, is for people to wake up that the whole cathedral is full of shit, that this is all a fucking smoke and mirrors show. And I love that so many people have to be looking at this and just being like, man, they are like you might, Brian Stelter might as well be a part of the Biden administration, right? What difference would it make if they switched roles here? The press secretary was just writing the questions for him or something. Would it be any different than this? Could it be any different than this? Like this is, you know, it's just we have in effect state media in the country.
They're all getting their marching orders from the CIA. So, you know, they're just checking in. But yeah, if you got the details, so tell us the details on the timeline. Simple question.
Yeah, just something like that. It's like, okay, so give me detail. Okay, you said you have the details. All right, let's talk details. Transition into one real question. Something. Anything that actually matters to the American people.
If you switched around the interview, this would be like Saki sitting there and just going, Brian, I love your hair. What kind of conditioner are you using? And it's the Pert Plus. It's working really good. Yeah, I can see that shine.
It's a shampoo and a conditioner all in one bottle. Saves you time. You know what I mean? Anyway, man, it's glorious. It's glorious to watch all of this falling apart. All right. I think we're gonna wrap up there. I enjoyed this episode. It's a little different from what we normally do, but I like talking about the state of comedy. It relates to culture and politics and all the good stuff we normally talk about. All right, that's our show for today. Come see us in Brooklyn next week. Come see us in Connecticut in a couple weeks, and in Porkfest, although that's sold out. But if you already got tickets, can't wait to see you up there. All right. That's it. Oh, and go watch, Run Your Mouth. Follow Rob on Twitter at Robbie the Fire. Summer I'll Porch Store.
If anyone shows up to Porkfest and sets up a shakedown street because you can't get inside, for those not familiar, if you ever go to a Grateful Dead show, there's people that follow the tour, don't even go to the shows. They just party outside. I'll party outside with you. I don't think there's a parking lot for it. I don't think they have an area. I will stand on the side of the road and drink beers and be a part of Porkfest Shakedown Street for people who couldn't get tickets.
I'll be inside the festival.
Yeah, I'm sure you will be. And I'm sure the festival directors don't want me saying that. But I'm just saying, if we can build a shakedown street.
This is almost certainly in breach of our contract to even promote this. Don't even pay for tickets. We'll do the show for free for you. Doesn't matter. They're paying us thousands of dollars to be here, but we'll just come give it to you for free. Same show. You're a sucker if you buy the tickets, to be honest. This is not the way you promote a gig, Rob. Rob, we gotta have a long talk about the level of success.
You've never been to a dead show. It's good for business.
All right. That's our show for tonight. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys soon. Peace.